Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams. President Trump has issued executive orders that beef up immigration enforcement and that also affect refugees and travelers from certain majority Muslim countries. Is toughening these rules on immigrants and refugees a good thing for New Mexico? And what are the implications? How are local officials responding? We want to hear from you. The number is 877-899-5866. You can join the conversation on Twitter, where we're live tweeting the program. Our handle is at KUNM News. And you can also post comments to our webpage. That's KUNM.org. Joining us today to talk about what Trump's policies mean for communities here in New Mexico are Rahim Alhaj, a musician based in Albuquerque who came to the States as a refugee, and Rachel Azar of the immigrant rights group El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
So, Rahim, you came here as a refugee something like 17 years ago, right? Tell us your story. How did you end up coming here, and what was it like going through that refugee process?
Well, first of all, I would say I don't like the word refugee, to be honest. I think it's a wrong word to be a refugee because it's absolutely against the dignity of a human being. All of us, as a human being, either refugee or immigrants. So by to born in some place, you have to born in some place, and then you move, basically. So it's really word. This word is wrong to say somebody he's a refugee or right. he's a migrant.
So what should we be calling people?
Moving people. That's what we live in one earth, and we just move from place to another. For example, in our home here in Southwest, 40 years from now, with the climate change, we're going to move. It's not going to be livable. So that consider us, what, refugee or immigrants? All of us came from, there's two reason for immigrants, people moving, basically. There's no third reason. First reason is economic reason and political reason. And we experienced since the humanity when it started, basically. So I came to United States. Actually, this month will be my 17 years anniversary. So,
as a congratulations.
Thank you. Everyone. So, as a refugee, as a word, which is like I said, against it, is I came here just because United Nations chose Albuquerque for me as a home. I came as a political asylum when I was working and fighting against Saddam regime during that time, and I was living in Syria.
Right, and from and you came here from Iraq. I'm not sure if we said that specifically before.
Right,
but that's obviously if the Saddam Hussein regime you were fighting against.
Yeah, so I moved to I fled Iraq during that time in 1991. I lived in Jordan and then in Syria, and then 2000 I came to the United States as a political asylum. And that's the process, and it's really, it's been a journey, and this is my home anyway. So luckily, I'm lucky enough that I have status in my home here in New Mexico. So, but we're talking about millions of people who come to any place, not just the United States, who crossing our borders or whatever we can think about it. And we call them illegal and refugee or immigrants, and really it's sad to see that it's like 2.7 million European people in the United States. It's like, well, we call them what? Refugees? We call them immigrants? We call them, a lot of them actually illegal, but we don't talk to them. We talk about Mexican. We talk about another Latin countries.
Mm. Yeah. And do you have, I know your wife is I know you don't like the word refugee, but it is a legal term, I guess. So
right.
It was a refugee from Syria. And I know some of the musicians that you play with in your band are also, from some of the countries that are affected by the executive orders. Has the orders that Trump has put forward impacted you or your friends in any way so far?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said in the beginning, is the executive director, I mean, the executive order is illegal to ban somebody from this planet to move to some place. So why this is seven countries? Why not Saudi Arabia? Right? I mean, why? And I think I'm almost positive. You know, Trump, he decided the seven countries because he does not have a job with them, quite frankly. But, I mean, as a musician, and I have one of my band, he's Iranian, Sorun Asafati, and we canceled a lot of concerts just because when we go abroad, and he canceled all this concert because he cannot come back to the United States.
So one of the musicians in your band might not be able to come back because of the travel ban? And
absolutely.
So you weren't able to – you have to cancel a whole tour?
Absolutely. That's what happened. So I canceled all this tour just because he cannot – I mean, I cannot really – guarantee that's because he has a green card, but at that time when the order happened, that said, even you are a green card holder, you are forced to deportation.
Well, Rachel Lazar, we've had some things happen in New Mexico recently. I mean, there was several people picked up by ICE in Las Cruces a few weeks ago. Just a few days ago, I think five people in Albuquerque were picked up by federal immigration officers. I mean, what can you tell us about what's been happening on the immigration front? And also, who do you know who these people are that have been getting picked up?
Sure. So thank you for having us here. In terms of who's getting picked up, we're talking about our neighbors. We're talking about the small business owner down the road, our coworkers, our parents, our cousins, our family members, and the people that we pray with, right? And so we're talking about New Mexicans who are getting picked up. Just to put this in a little bit of perspective about what the executive orders actually do. So President Trump's draconian and cruel executive orders threaten to separate immigrant families. And the way that they're going about doing that is by expanding an already massive deportation machine, dumping billions of dollars into for-profit detention centers and focusing on opening up new detention centers in border states, right? And so states like New Mexico, turning away those who are fleeing violence and persecution and abject poverty, and eroding our due process rights, pretty much trampling on our Constitution. And for states like New Mexico, we should also be concerned about the further militarization of border communities. And then you already mentioned, right, really targeting and discriminating against folks from Muslim communities and those who come from Muslim-majority countries. And so the impact that we've seen in Albuquerque, at least so far, is that we've already seen an uptick in ICE activity, targeting our families here in Albuquerque. And I think it's important to put this in perspective. There have been times in history, right? ICE has a permanent presence here in Albuquerque, and there have been times in history where we've had greater numbers of people being transferred into ICE custody, right? And the way that happened in the past was the use of our criminal justice system, so in our jail. The reason this is different and that it's creating so much more fear and uncertainty are the tactics that are being used. So when you use raids, when you show up at 5 or 6 o'clock and at someone's home, right, and you have 10 to 12 cars surrounding that home, and you target people or you go door to door, the tactics that are being used purport to go after few, but they're sweeping up many and they terrorize all. And so those are the tactics that are being used by this administration, right, to create uncertainty, to create fear, to create terror in our communities, the uncertainty of not knowing if ICE is going to be waiting for you at your job when you show up at 6 o'clock in the morning, right, if they're going to be showing up in courts. And we've had really concerning presence of ICE in our local court systems. And we should be incredibly concerned about the chilling impact that that's going to have on our public safety, on the ability of victims to come forward. And to be honest, we believe that everyone, regardless of their immigration status, should have the constitutional, the right to defend themselves against criminal charges. And so we should be incredibly concerned about the tactics of this administration.
So if I can just like make sure I understand here, the tactics used to be that ICE would be in jails, and I guess they still are in jails at some capacity, right?
So what we're seeing so far from this administration is the promise to actually expand those enforcement programs. You cannot deport millions of people without using the infrastructure of local governments. And so they're using both tactics, right, to try to expand these really harsh, draconian deportation programs like 287G. That was the famous program, right, in Maricopa County, right, in Arizona, that pretty much deputizes local law enforcement. This administration wants to expand deportation programs like Secure Communities. That was the program that Mayor Barry expanded into our prisoner transport center. It was then dismantled by the Obama administration because of the fact that it fomented racial profiling and pretextual arrests. Their components of it were found to be unconstitutional, and it was really bad for public safety. So the Obama administration dismantled that program in 2014. So what the Trump administration is trying to do is expand those enforcement programs in addition to now using the tactics of raiding people in their homes, at their work sites, and having a presence inside our court systems.
Well, you said that the people that were picked up by ICE in Albuquerque and Las Cruces were just, you know, neighbors, business owner, you know, just regular people. But Trump says he's going after, you know, criminals, people that have committed violent crimes, the famous bad hombres quote that he made. So, I mean, do they have any kind of criminal record? I mean, do we know if the people that law enforcement has gone after are people that are being prioritized, or are they just kind of willy-nilly picking up? What do we know?
Okay, and you're talking about ICE, right?
ICE.
Versus law enforcement.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Immigration enforcement.
Absolutely. And what we know is that a lot of people who were picked up here in Albuquerque had absolutely no criminal history. And so we have stories of a gentleman who showed up at work at 6 a.m., was approached by someone in plain clothes, asked about someone else who wasn't present at work that day, and then proceeded to interrogate him about his immigration status. And he was picked up. This is a father of a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And, you know, within a couple hours, their entire life changed. The breadwinner was picked up. This family now is going to be plunged into further poverty, right? And this gentleman had absolutely no criminal history. But we also have to be concerned, even when you purport to go after criminals, under this administration, the president is greatly expanding the definition of criminal. And if you read the executive orders, in addition to the memos that were issued by the Department of Homeland Security, anybody is vulnerable. Right. Any non-citizen can be a target. And we should be very, very concerned that they did away with all the previous priority categories, right, of certain types of criminal offenses. And now it's anyone who's even a suspect of a crime. And so we should be incredibly concerned about this administration trampling on our constitutional rights and eroding due process and greatly expanding the definition of criminal in this country.
Well, we're also joined in the studio now by Kazi Sinandile. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Kazi. Sorry. You work with Women's Global Pathways. That's a refugee support organization in Albuquerque. And you told me earlier about a story where you had an encounter with immigration agents. I wonder if you could just really quickly tell us that story.
Yeah. So just to give a background, like most law enforcement people and other citizens do not understand the difference between refugee and immigrant status. Sometimes those groups are lumped together. And so if a policeman, let's say you are a refugee and you don't speak English, or an immigrant that doesn't speak English, and you get stopped. Let's say that you're stopped, you don't know what to say. And so as long as you show a paper and you don't speak English, of course, somebody's going to put you in jail. And then you're not able to speak for yourself and say, okay, let me call a lawyer, because you don't know English, right? So you are a refugee. So a refugee is legal by the time they get, like, at the airport in Albuquerque. But most refugees may not know what to tell the person who stops them. And so that's why they end up in jail. And so the immigrant as well, if somebody doesn't speak English, even let's say from Africa, and they don't know their rights, they have no lawyers, those people, once they are stopped, they are told that you can be deported. Are you a citizen? They'll ask, are you a citizen? So if you don't know English, how are you going to respond? So there's many people that are going to be in jail for just because they didn't know English, or the policeman did not know the difference between a refugee and a status and an immigrant.
And you see that the if there's an interaction between law enforcement and refugees, that there's confusion, that they might think that these are immigrants, not refugees.
Correct. As long, especially if they see that hijab, they just right away they say, oh, this one is an immigrant. This one is illegal, because they don't know. They don't study to find out what the difference is between those two. So this example that I have, we're at the border crossing in New Mexico with my husband. And so we were driving a long van, and behind me was sitting about a family of refugees that have been here for 1 year. And they were already legal. They had already gotten their green cards. So the customs person came and said, so, are you legal? That's what they do. Are you legal? You are a U.S. citizen? My husband says yes. So he went to the other door and then opened where the refugees were sitting. And so then they don't speak English, right? So he was trying to ask them what their status is. So I said, well, these people don't understand English and they are refugees, which means that they are legal here. But anyway, he ended up taking all their IDs to make sure that he checked for sure that they were legal. So if I was not there to speak on their behalf, they could have been taken into custody and then maybe released. Hopefully, they would get a lawyer or somebody would speak on their behalf and get released.
Well, we're talking about President Trump's executive orders on immigration, refugees, and travel with Kazi Sanindale of Women's Global Pathways, Rahim Al-Haj, and Rachel Azar of El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos. We're going to take a short break here, and then we'll be right back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Independent Vehicle Service, providing repair and maintenance on foreign cars for 35 years, congratulates KUNM on this milestone 50th anniversary.
When the envelope arrives with the Buddha mask and recumbent trike, you really need to open it. See for yourself how much you are needed right now. This year, legislation was introduced to defund public radio. Most of KUNM's budget comes from listeners like you, but if we lost the 13% allocated by Congress, well, it would hurt. If you value what we do, please do as much as you can. Do it before March 31st, and you may win one of three beautiful folk art pieces. Watch your mail or enter and give at KUNM.org.
This is KUNM 89.9, broadcasting from the University of New Mexico. We're back talking about Trump's travel ban, his ban on refugees, and promises to ramp up immigration enforcement. Are you concerned about refugees and immigrants coming to New Mexico? Are you a student or a business owner who could be affected by these policies? Do you have family or friends who are feeling the impacts of the executive orders? Call now. The number is 877-899-5866. You can join the conversation on Twitter, where we're live tweeting the program. Our handle there is @KUNMNews. And we're joined on the phone now by Javier Gonzalez, the mayor of Santa Fe. Mayor Gonzalez, welcome.
Hey, Ed. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good
thanks.
Good to be with you in the panel.
Yeah, likewise. Mayor Gonzalez, you've taken a strong pro-immigrant position, and so has the city council. Santa Fe passed a measure just last week reaffirming the city is immigrant-friendly. So for starters, I mean, what does that mean?
Well, first, I think what it was a pro-Santa Fe measure. When you consider the fact that for more than 400 years, Santa Fe has been a collection of beautiful cultures, starting with the indigenous and moving on to the Spanish, then the Mexican, and of course the European. We have really recognized that we are strongest and our identity is strongest when we are welcoming and when we certainly support and accept the full participation of all people, regardless of what their statuses. And so what we did is increase the strength of the resolution that had been on the books since 1999, which basically prioritized the allocation of law enforcement resources. It set a series of policies that forbid police officers or city employees to ask for what the status is of individuals. And what it's meant since that period of time is that we become actually a safer city. We have people that have been able to come out of the shadows and be able to feel safe. And when you're feeling safe, you share information with the police on people who actually do want to do harm to your community. And of course, we've seen since that time period also an incredible contribution to our economy through the workforce. Business owners have created unlimited amounts of jobs or just a large amount of new jobs who are new immigrants. And so we have seen the benefit of being a welcoming city. It has made Santa Fe stronger. And unfortunately, under this administration, from the earliest days of Donald Trump's candidacy, he made it very clear where he stood when it came with immigrants. Whether it was calling Mexican immigrants, rapists and thugs and murderers, calling for the Muslim ban, he's been very clear on where he stands. And it's important now more than ever that cities like Santa Fe and others throughout New Mexico and throughout the country pass policies that protect the confidentiality of the people living in their communities and assure that they are able to wake up and feel safe and not worry about their local government using resources to disrupt their families because of a broken immigration system.
Well, the federal government can withhold funds to the city of Santa Fe because of the position you're taking, and I think they've threatened to do that. So, what if that happens? What would that mean?
Actually, they can't. There is a clear case law. Most as recently as the Affordable Care Act, where the Supreme Court said that the federal government cannot compel the state or local governments to act on legislation or federal laws under the threat of losing federal resources in other areas that have nothing to do with that law. So, the fact that Santa Fe gets anywhere from $6 to $10 million a year to support home ownership, our airport, warm meals for our seniors, all of that, we feel very confident that the Trump administration does not have any legal basis to be able to withhold funds for us having policies that prioritize resources and create confidentiality. So one of the things that's important to know is that and I know a lot of people love to use the word the rule of law, and that is what we do up here in Santa Fe. And we have made it very clear through our resolutions that we do follow the rule of law. We are fully compliant with state and federal laws.
Well, but, supporters of stronger immigration enforcement say you're not following the rule of law if you're undocumented.
Well, that's look, first of all, there is a broken immigration system that can be fixed very easily. The reality is that people are in our country because either there are work opportunities or they're fleeing persecution from a different place. And this country, part of our identity has always been about welcoming people, making sure that there's a safe place and ensuring that there's an opportunity for them to participate. What we have done, because we haven't had the courage at the federal level to reach across party lines and to be able to reform immigration, is that we have conveniently, moved down this path of calling people illegal, demonizing their presence when they're contributing. And quite honestly, I think that goes counter certainly to New Mexico's values and counter to the American values. So I think that the federal government needs to step up. They need to reform the system, and specifically to do that, create an easier pathway to get a work permit, a visa, allow people to come out of the shadows so we know where they are. They can begin to participate in paying more federal taxes. And then, of course, where the president has said he wants to focus on, I join, and many local governments say, let's focus on securing our borders, not through building walls, but by collaboration between local governments and the federal government, to go after people that want to commit crime in our country. And that is what we've been doing in Santa Fe since 1999. If there is a undocumented person who's committed a felony in our community, we work very closely with ICE to pursue them and to make sure that they're arrested and that they're deported. It happens too often, and when you hear some of these tragic stories about American families whose loved ones have lost their lives to undocumented individuals, that's because of a broken border system that is allowing people to come back into the country, and that's the stuff that we have to focus our efforts on overcoming.
Rachel, did you want to add something?
Oh no, just to support what the mayor was saying, that provisions of sanctuary policies or immigrant friendly policies actually lie in line, not in defiance of our federal system, and our local jurisdictions have no legal obligation to assist with the civil immigration enforcement. That's the sole responsibility, or that's under the sole purview of the federal government. And this administration is attempting to coerce and bully municipalities into assisting into the enforcement of federal immigration laws by threatening to withdraw federal funding. And as Mayor Gonzalez said, that is in clear violation of the 10th Amendment, right? And the doctrine that really says that precludes the federal government from attempting to compel state and local governments either directly or by the use of coercive threats to withhold federal funding. And so we have tools to fight back against that. And what our cities, what our municipalities and counties are saying is that the federal government cannot bully and coerce us into doing something that is so antithetical, that it will have such a chilling impact on public safety, on the integration of our immigrant communities, that trample on our constitutional and due process rights. And so that is why the actions taken by Santa Fe, and we should be proud as a state that Santa Fe now has probably the strongest policy in the nation. What Albuquerque did a couple weeks ago was reaffirm a policy that we had passed back in 2000, and we're very, very proud of that. But Santa Fe gave us something as a city to aspire towards, right? Because we know that the threats under this current administration are not the same threats that we were facing back in 2000. And that's why we're proud of the city of Albuquerque, not only for reaffirming, but for committing to reviewing all of our local policies look for places in which we can strengthen them.
Well, Mayor Gonzalez, thank you for calling. I appreciate you weighing in on the conversation.
Of course. Thank you, Ed. I appreciate you guys having this conversation with Mexico.
Great. Well, we got a lot of phone calls to get to. Allegra Love is on the line with us from Santa Fe as well. Allegra is an immigration attorney up there working with Dreamers and asylum seekers and other people that are potentially affected by this executive order. Hi, Allegra, are you with us?
Yeah, I am. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. So Mayor Gonzalez just told us about Santa Fe's, immigrant-friendly policies and positions. I mean, does that mean that the people that you're working with are feeling some relief?
Absolutely not. I mean, of course they're grateful, as I am, that we have this sanctuary policy. But that's really only part of the one piece of the puzzle, because we have ICE in our city right now arresting people, and families understand the content of the memo that the Trump administration put out about enforcement last week, and they're really, really scared. I mean, case in point, we had a power of attorney fair last night for families to come meet volunteer lawyers and sign powers of attorneys in case of arrest for custody of their children. We had hundreds and hundreds of families show up because they're starting to prepare for the arrest contingency. So signing powers of attorneys for their kids and for their property, because they're really, really terrified. And they're terrified they're going to be arrested, and they're terrified they're going to be separated from their children.
So what are you telling people to do if immigration officers come and knock on your door? Like, what rights do you have?
You have rights in the event that an immigration officer comes to your home. You have rights on the street. You have rights in your workplace. And it's going to depend exactly where you are. Generally speaking, at your home, if they need to show up with an order of arrest that has your name on it and the right direction, direction is a Spanish word, the right address of your house and a judge's signature. And if they show up with a warrant at your house looking for you, you're going to have to comply. But otherwise, you don't open the door and you don't answer their questions. And that's what we're trying to remind and teach our immigrant neighbors to remember, but also all the citizens in Santa Fe, too, because we can be really instrumental in disrupting ICE activity in our town and protecting the civil rights of our immigrant neighbors as they have contact with law enforcement.
And you also work, Allegra, with asylum seekers, right?
Yes.
That's a big part of your clientele as an attorney. I mean, what are you hearing from them? I haven't heard much mention of people seeking asylum, which I guess is a different category than refugee.
Right.
Yeah, there's this sort of, in my experience, it's been this sort of hidden group of people as we start learning and focusing a lot on refugees. Refugees are people who get their admission to the United States granted from another country. So they're in the Middle East. They're in the Middle East, and they get their refugee status, and they come to the U.S. Asylum seekers are people who have to arrive to the United States and then ask for their help, right? So in Santa Fe, that means we have tons of Central Americans, Guatemalans, Hondurans, and Salvadorans, who are seeking asylum in the U.S. I think what the orders are saying is that people seeking asylum they're going to not be released anymore, and they're going to try and detain them on the border and make them seek their asylum case detained, which is an incredibly scary thing to do. That's what I think these changes are for our asylum seekers.
Kazi, you were nodding your head just a moment ago. Do you see a lot of asylum seekers in the work? Because you work mostly with refugees, but...
I was talking asylum.
Yeah, no. Kazi Sandaliza. Yeah.
So from time to time, we interact with other immigrants, so refugees and other immigrants. And for me, other immigrants are like people who don't cross the borders from Mexico. And of course, asylum seekers are part of that, are different. But we do have some people, asylum seekers, who can, if they're not approved to be here in the U.S., they struggle a lot. And until they get that status to be legal, then they are prone to be arrested and they are prone to be sent home.
But did these executive orders make someone seeking asylum like less likely to get that asylum?
I think you cannot seek asylum here because you already have a consecutive order that abandoned this country to come, of these people from these countries to come in. I will give you an example. 7-8 years ago, there's an Iraqi, if you would say it, seeker for his life. Actually, he went from Baghdad. And there's a movie actually about it, and I was fortunate to make the music for it, who escaped Iraq in Baghdad, went to north, to Kurds, to Kurdistan, and then to Turkey, to Europe, to Latin America, and then he came to the United States. It's illegally, if we can say, right? Okay, so when he arrived here and he worked with the government, he worked with the American army as a translator and with a rotation when at that time when their occupation in Iraq. And he was for 4 years working with American army. And then when his job done, they said, well, you are illegal. We will deport you. And while he was working with the government for 4 years. So, and then when he get the asylum, he said, no, I came here because of that reason. So I think seeking asylum is just because you need a refuge and you need some protection. And that the status will change from one status to another. For example, if you think of somebody who, like me, I was prosecuted in Iraq and then I escaped my country, right? That make me an asylum or somebody like this Iraqi guy who left Iraq with that circumstances during the Arab War, and then we end up in the United States and they cannot put him in one category. And then the shift of how can we see this human being and we label them whatever we see. For example, I will tell an example. Last year I get a National Heritage Award, right? And I received a beautiful letter from President Obama telling me, thank you, Rahim, for reaching in this country. 2 months later, I'm not welcome in here.
So if these executive orders were in place when you were seeking asylum from Iraq, what would have happened?
I will not have riot anyway. They will detain me. I mean, I give you an example. Like 2 months ago, for example, there's a two Iraqi family in our home in Albuquerque who there's a Iraqi lady who went back to Baghdad because her mom was too ill to see her. And she left her two kids, 7 and 9, in Albuquerque. Right. So when she went to Baghdad in Iraq and she didn't want to come back and she cannot, they didn't let her come in, even though she is a refugee. So and they just, you know, and these two kids, they cannot do anything. So if I am in the same situation, he said, well, if I need to seek asylum right now, there is no way I could have that status anymore.
You're listening to the KUNM Call-In Show live from the University of New Mexico. We're talking about President Trump's executive orders on immigration and refugees. We want to hear from you. Do tighter rules on refugees and immigrants impact you or someone you know? How? Are you an international student worried about visiting home? The number to call is 877-899-5866. You can also send us an email at callinshow@kunm.org or tweet at KUNM News. We'll take a short break here and we'll be right back to get to some calls.
If you're looking for a way to get a substantial tax deduction for 2016, consider donating that old car or truck or RV or motorcycle or motorboat or even farm equipment, nearly anything with an engine. This is the perfect time to call. We'll arrange for a tow truck to come out and handle everything from there. You get a tax letter for 2016 and a KUNM membership. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
The priorities of environmental groups and tribes often align, but sometimes they are at odds. Issues like hunting, land conservation, and others can occasionally lead to friction between tribes and established environmental organizations. What steps should each side take to work together? That's on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams, reporter for Public Health New Mexico, a KUNM reporting project providing in-depth investigative coverage of public health and poverty in our state. We are talking about the president's executive orders on immigration, travel, and refugees with Nkazi Sinandile from Women's Global Pathways, musician and refugee Rahim Alhaj, and Rachel Lazar of El Centro de Igualdad de Derechos. Give us a ring, 877-899-5866 is the number to call. You can also send us an email at callinshow@kunm.org, or you can post comments to our Facebook page. Let's go to the phones right now. Sarah is on the line from Las Cruces. Sarah is director of NM Cafe, which is an immigrant rights organization down there. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you, Ed?
You guys have had some action down in Las Cruces and in southern New Mexico with ICE lately, as I understand. So what are you seeing down south? What's going on?
Unfortunately, we've seen an increase in Customs and Border Protection, CBP, and ICE coordinating on raids in Doñana County. We had upwards of 10 sites on Wednesday the 15th with people identifying ICE and CBP in their communities, mostly low-income communities, mobile home parks in Las Cruces and the surrounding county. And in my 13 years of organizing experience, I've never seen this level of fear and isolation in our immigrant community, but then also our Latino community in general, people really feeling targeted and understanding that this is also a lens with which we have to look at race and ethnicity and skin color. CBP, Customs and Border Protection, is one of the largest law enforcement agencies in the country. And when President Obama at the time created an executive order stopping racial profiling amongst all law enforcement agencies that are under federal jurisdiction, he exempted CBP. And so as Rachel was talking earlier about 287G agreements that were created under Bush, and then the certain tools and structures that Obama created and that Congress created, we have now handed over this entire machinery over to Trump, and he and DHS have basically as much power as they want to wield in our communities.
Well, you said that you haven't seen this level of activity and fear in 13 years, but Obama, they used to call him the deporter in chief, right? I mean, he deported a whole lot of people. So I guess what I'm wondering is this something new that's going on, or is it just that it's in the spotlight now, so we're paying attention to it? Rachel, you can jump in on this too. You know,
I think it's a both and. The Rachel does, you know, she said, you know, the definition of criminal and criminal behavior has expanded. When ICE and CBP go together, they have different orders, but then that line gets blurred when they go together on raids. Those search warrants, when they could not find that person, they would not then pick up the person that was in front of them. Now they're doing that. We've seen on the border, the closer you are to the border, the smaller your rights get, especially our Fourth Amendment rights in terms of search and seizure. So when we are in southern New Mexico and we're between an international border and interior checkpoints, the anxiety is palpable in our communities.
You know, there are people who are for these, you know, increased law enforcement activities, including in, you know, the city of Albuquerque. There are several people to vote against recent immigration protection order, or at least one. You know, we've reached out to lawmakers locally who are in favor of greater immigration enforcement. We reached out to the governor. We reached out to ICE. We reached out to the mayor of Albuquerque, who was traveling, so he couldn't join us. But we didn't get responses from any of those other people. What about expedited removal? That's a term that I'm hearing a lot that I think a lot of people are confused about. What does that mean for people? Who's affected?
Right. The other thing that has changed is that there's expedited removal if you are detained at the border or within the 100-mile zone of the border, and if your reentry or entry was under a certain amount of days, you can be immediately deported. That rule has now changed, where people are getting picked up that have been here for 30 years. Their one thing that they have on their record is a reentry charge, and they get detained and deported immediately. We've seen those cases as well. The challenge is ICE doesn't return anybody's phone calls, even senators' offices. And when we try to locate these family members once they're detained, so we're creating rapid response networks so that we can try to track that person and then accompany the family as soon as raids hit in our communities.
What are families doing? I mean, so you're like, as I understand, in Las Cruces, there was, you know, a father who was picked up, and maybe the same in Albuquerque. I mean, what options do the remaining, you know, families that are remaining here in the States have once, you know, one of their other family members are picked up?
Well, I mean, it depends on the situation. We had one business owner in Las Cruces get picked up. She has two citizen children, a partner here. There's breadwinners that are getting picked up and detained, and then their citizen children are left here. They also have, you know, other mixed status family members that are here. Their options are few, and our churches and congregations are providing accompaniment services, like finding an attorney, making sure bills get paid, and there's childcare. But the week of the raids that happened, 2,000 children were absent from school in the Las Cruces public school system. At the elementary level, that was 150% increase in absences the next day. People were missing doctor appointments on unprecedented levels, that there were missed and canceled appointments that week. Mothers and fathers were missing work and were choosing not to go to the grocery store to get food. People were hunkering down, filing powers of attorney the weeks following. I mean, if any other crisis had created this kind of impact, a flood, a fire, economics, we would be doing everything to address these fears and anxieties. And instead, we're having public officials that agree with these policies, want to see more of it, and then others that are remaining silent.
Thanks for your call, Sarah. Rachel, you wanted to say something?
Oh, I think it's important to recognize that yes, during the Obama administration, our communities were only too aware of the devastating impact of family separation and of deportation. I think what's different is the tactics, right, and the tactics that purposefully are creating terror in the community. But I also want to state, we've experienced the same with our membership. There is a high level of uncertainty, but on the other hand, there is a lot of amazing organizing going on. And we have to remember that as a state in New Mexico, we're poised to fight back. Summarily rejected Trump's hate agenda in November in the elections. We have a proud legacy of passing policies that are conducive to immigrant integration. And these policies have been passed because of amazing organizing by refugee and immigrant communities here in New Mexico. And so we have a strong foundation. We have a strong foundation here in Albuquerque. We have policies that we have in place that we are working to strengthen to ensure, right, that this expanded deportation machine that the Trump administration is putting into place is mitigated. And so I just want to mention that, because with the uncertainty, there's also a lot of resiliency, and there is a lot of fight back from the community itself.
So I guess the flip side is that communities in places like the Deep South or, you know, or elsewhere might not have as many resources as immigrants do here.
Well, there's the resource issue. There's also just the legacy.
Yeah.
We should be proud to be New Mexicans, right? Because we have done things differently in this state than they have done in other states. But that said, this is a national movement, right? This is a movement to really across the entire country. We would say that what is happening right now at the national level is against our collective values as a nation, right? And so as a movement, we're fighting back across the country.
877-899-5866 is the number to call if you want to weigh in on this conversation. And let's go back to the phones. Edward is on the line with us from Santa Fe. Edward is director of the New Mexico Law and Poverty Center. Is that right, Edward?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you.
Are you there? Looks like we lost Edward. Counselor Isaac Benton is also on the line with us, calling from Albuquerque. Counselor Benton?
Good morning, Ed.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
So you were one of the city councilors who introduced a measure in support of immigration and also to open up this new immigrant and refugee center. Can you tell us a little bit about why taking that position was necessary in your view, and what resources have come out of that?
Well, I think what's important to note is that the present mayor, when he ran for office, did make an existing immigrant-friendly policy part of his campaign. We felt it was important now, after 16 years of having an immigrant-friendly policy, to reaffirm that. So in 2000, a bipartisan vote of the city council, and I think that was signed by the mayor at that time, made a strong statement that the city of Albuquerque is an immigrant-friendly community, and that we support humane immigration reform. That is still in place, despite some actions on the part of the Berry administration. And we wanted to
reaffirm
that.
What actions are you talking about?
The mayor in 2009, and when briefly had a Republican majority on the city council, did change some of the city's operating procedures, in that they allowed ICE to not really intervene, but to be present as part of the city's prisoner transport system. So the city, of course, has to transport prisoners to the jail. And at that time, it was contentious, but the mayor did allow them in. I think that's changed since then. But nonetheless, that never did change our existing policy dating back to 2000 as an immigrant-friendly community.
Okay. Rachel?
Just to add to what Councillor Benton was saying, the problem with the program that Mayor Berry expanded into the Prisoner Transport Center is that it was screening people upon arrest. So it wasn't even targeting people post-conviction. So when you screen everybody by ICE who's under arrest, that obviously foments racial profiling, pretextual arrests. You have victims that get caught up in that system. And you create that airtight pipeline, right, from our local criminal justice system to deportation. So it didn't matter if people were found innocent of the charges, of the criminal charges that got them arrested. There was a period of time that non-citizens, right, that got caught up into the system, oftentimes were transferred into the custody of ICE for nothing more than maybe a speeding ticket that turned into an arrest warrant. So we should be, I mean, the programs, one of the programs is called Secure Communities. For these reasons, it was dismantled by the Obama administration after, unfortunately, he had expanded it. This is the same program that the Trump administration now is trying to coerce local municipal governments into enforcing programs and, like Secure Communities. So we should be incredibly concerned when the mayor recently was quoted as saying that he would welcome ICE, right, to screen suspects. And I would ask, what about the presumption of innocence, right, that is supposed to be, you know, a foundation, right, of our Constitution and of our criminal justice system?
We did reach out to APD to try to get a statement from them about their position on collaborating with federal immigration enforcement. Have you heard anything from them? Have they put out a position or
said? We have not. They've not recently done that, but it should be made very clear that and the memorial that we passed, again, with a bipartisan vote, states that or points out the fact that police APD standard operating procedures prevent the reporting of crime to ICE. So essentially, we have these policies in place. We don't know of any violations of these policies at this time, but we have directed staff, and we do have an inspector general in the city if necessary, to if we determine that there's any violation of those operating procedures.
Kazi, did you have anything that you wanted to say on that front?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that, sometimes we talk about policies and to the extent to where we really forget the people. Because when we call a city a friendly city to immigrants and refugees, sometimes we forget, we get caught up in discussions and organizing and forget that there's a lot of, how can I say, there are low-level news consumers, people who are refugees, immigrants, who don't speak English, who don't listen to the news. And then most of these people, they get harassed in bus stops, they get harassed in stores, and then they don't know how to respond, they don't know what to say. So I think that with this conversation, the city needs to devise a way to educate the uneducated or those refugees, like the ones that I work with and immigrants, to let them know, how do you protect yourself? What happens to you when you're in a bus stop and somebody, harasses you because of what you are wearing, whatever your hijab, your work? So my thing is that, please, the police station, the city needs to get together and see how best we can protect the undocumented, the refugees and the immigrants who don't have a voice but are afraid because of the refugee and immigrant anti-sentiment.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. That's all the time we have, unfortunately. But thanks to all our guests, to all our callers. We've been talking with Nkazi Sinandile from Women's Global Pathways, Rahim Alhaj, local musician who came to this country seeking refuge back in 2000. This is some of his music you're hearing right now. And Rachel Lazar of El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos. If you missed part of this program or want to hear it again, you can find it and past episodes on our website, KUNM.org. We're also podcasting the show on iTunes. Marino Spencer engineered the program today. Sarah Trujillo screened your calls. Anna Landy was live tweeting the show. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and the McCune Charitable Foundation. Find out more online at publichealthnm.org. I'm Ed Williams. Thanks for listening.